some Christians become like the people who once greeted President Theodore Roosevelt at a gala ball. All of them said the same thing, smiled the same tired smile, repeating the right greetings by rote, talking with their mouths, not their heads or their hearts. Tired of shaking hands and smiling his big smile and responding with the usual inanities used at such occasions, Roosevelt did something absolutely outrageous. Convinced that no one was listening anyway, he began to greet the rest of his guests by saying with a smile, "I murdered my grandmother this morning." Everyone smiled at him and said things like, "Wonderful, lovely, keep up the good work." One diplomat was listening, however. He leaned over and whispered into Roosevelt's ear, "I'm sure she had it coming to her." Every Christian talk drives me up a wall when it is filled with cliches. Doesn't nonsensical small talk make you want to throw up? Especially when you realize you have been guilty of it yourself. The more it goes on in our lives, the more the real Christian life is losing its zip. With Esther, her walk with God was an exciting adventure. She stepped into the king's presence because she had confidence in God. Esther planned a banquet because she trusted God to do the unexpected. Are you still open to the unexpected? Are you really waiting on the Lord to do His will? Let's say you're single and you really want to be married. And you're waiting on the Lord to do what? Find you a mate? But are you ready for Him to say surprise? You will find happiness in being single for the rest of your life. You may be married and having serious trouble with your mate, and so you wait on the Lord to take care of him, take care of her. But during the waiting period, the Lord says, "Surprise, we have to take care of you. You're a greater part of the problem than your mate." Perhaps you are a parent of a wayward child. Are you ready to hear, "Surprise, you're part of the reason your child is such a rebel"? Or you may finally feel settled, happy in your job, and somewhat financially secure. But soon, God may be saying to you, "Surprise, I'm going to move you out of this job, away from this location." Are you willing to shift agendas for God to have His way? Who would ever have guessed God's plan for Esther? Yet here she was at the banquet with the king and Haman. By the way, she still hasn't told the king what is troubling her, but surely he knows something is wrong. She would never have risked coming into his presence as she did unless she had a very good reason. So as they're sitting together at the feast, he raises the matter again. And as they drank their wine at the banquet, the king said to Esther, "What is your petition? For it shall be granted to you. And what is your request? Even to half of the kingdom it shall be done." So Esther answered and said, "My petition and my request is, if I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my petition and do what I request, may the king and Haman come to the banquet which I shall prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king says." Esther chapter 5, verses 6 through 8. Esther could have done everything today that she's going to do tomorrow. But she's trusting God's timing on this. So she says, "There's something I want to say to you, but I will wait till tomorrow." For some reason, as we'll soon learn, God's timing requires one more day. A proud and sinister response. Meanwhile, Haman, the guy you love to hate, is strutting around cloud nine. Then Haman went out that day glad and pleased of heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate and that he did not stand up or tremble before him, Haman was filled with anger against Mordecai. Haman controlled himself, however, went to his house and sent for his friends and his wife Zeresh. Esther chapter 5, verses 9 and 10. He walks out of the palace thinking, "Boy, am I ever in clover. I've just had a private dinner and audience with the king and the queen. What an honor. My star is on the rise. The sky's the limit." It was the ultimate opportunity to drop names. Can you imagine Haman at the office the next day? I was with the king and queen last night, and yeah, a banquet for just the three of us. Yeah, I was the only one invited. As expected, I received a personal invitation from the queen. So he walks out of the palace, bursting with pride and ego, and he runs into Mordecai, that Jew who will not respect him. I love Mordecai. He's on top of everything, in the exact place where he should be for his part in God's plan. Remember, the last time we saw him, he couldn't go into the king's gate because he was wearing sackcloth and ashes. But now here he is, in the king's gate. Obviously, he's changed clothes. He senses God's at work. He knows that something great is about to happen. Also, despite Haman's official status and power, despite his evil decree, Mordecai is still not intimidated by Haman. He knows his God is greater than Haman.